Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Speedy Digest, and as we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, yes, I forgot to wait before my cue on the after the Blog Talk round did before, so sorry about that. It caught me that time, but anyways, we have an awesome show planned out, and hope everyone enjoys it. But first of all, Glenn, what are your thoughts on this week since we last talked on this podcast?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing. We had two really interesting races at Chicagoland, but the Cup race is what everybody's talking about, because the first couple of everything before lap 40 was kind of a snoozer, but then after lap 40, the pace just picked up, and wow, I have not seen a Earnhardt-esque move from any driver in quite a long time. I mean that pass for the lead with Brad Keselowski splitting Harvick and Larson three wide, that was spectacular.
Oh, I agree totally, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but did you do anything fun since last Wednesday?
Well, sort of yes and sort of no. I mean, one of the things that I was doing is that I for once got a weekend off where I could just recharge some batteries and also, you know, not be doing any of the science thing and stuff like that, but pretty much over the weekend, it was kind of like, you know, helping out around the house and all that. And this morning, I watched the movie Saving Mr. Banks. I finally got a chance to see it, and man, I'm still recovering from it because it was such a damn good movie. So if you haven't seen Saving Mr. Banks, go get the DVD. It's definitely worth watching.
That's cool, and I haven't done much. Just been busy with rubbingsracing.com and then doing my stuff with Speedway Digest. But, you know, I've been watching the Royals lately as well, and I'm actually watching the game on my laptop while I do this. But as everyone knows, I like to do. But, yeah, you know, it's been great since last week getting college stuff. That's been going good still. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. But, you know, it should be an awesome show night, and I'm also ready to get that going here. All right, so I guess our first talk tonight, while we still wait for Joseph, is that Ron Hornaday Jr. was picked up by NTS Motorsports to drive the number 9 truck that will be sponsored by Ream in two races at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway and the Texas Motor Speedway later on this year. So first of all, Glenn, give us your thoughts on that.
I'm pretty happy to see that Ron Hornaday has been picked up. I mean, unfortunately, he might not be able to win the championship because he's missed by that, that he was picked up after the fiasco and debacle over there at Turner Scott Motorsports, which do we even know if Turner Scott are starting to settle things or if they're, like, still at a bitter war with each other?
I don't know yet. You know, we haven't really heard. All I know is that they're going to still keep those two teams running still. So I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that from here on out, I think that number 30 truck is done. I don't think they'll be doing another third ride or not. So, but, you know, my thoughts on this topic is that, you know, I'm glad to see Ron Hornaday Jr. get a ride with another team before the season's out. You know, he's one of those drivers who I kind of like to compare with Tom Bodine because, you know, kind of similar situation. All these teams, they want veteran drivers, or I'm sorry, they want these younger drivers coming up, you know, and these veterans like Ron, you know, they get kicked to the curb, so to speak. And, you know, it sucks that all the teams are wanting the younger drivers, but I guess that's the way NASCAR is here in 2014. So, but, you know, it's nice to see Ron Hornaday Jr. back in the car, and so you know, I can't wait to see what he's going to be able to do in this ride. And obviously, you know, Ron drove for this team previously before moving over to Turner Scott Motorsports this season as well. So anything else on that before we move on?
Not really.
All right, and NASCAR announced penalties today to Austin Dillon, or I'm sorry, not Austin Dillon, but to the number 20 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series team for failing post-race technical inspection this past weekend at Chicagoland. The crew chief was fined $7,500 and suspended from NASCAR until September or later on next week. I don't know if you caught the penalty or not, Glenn, but from your understanding of it, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm actually a little surprised. I'm actually looking at it right now, and I see that they failed to meet the post-race body height ground clearance requirements. You know, we're so used to the Cup Series of no ride height and all that kind of stuff. You forget that in the Truck Series and the NASCAR Nationwide Series, soon to be the Xfinity Series, they have their ride height rules, and you'll hear, you know, people being too high or too low or stuff like that. But that's definitely going to sting a little bit.
Yeah, and Bob Newberry, which is the owner of this number 20 truck, was penalized with the loss of 10 series championship owner points as well.
Yeah, that has got to hurt. In fact, with the point standings that they are right now, where every position is worth 1 point, losing 10 championship owner points is pretty bad. I mean, if we had the old system, I think that would be the equivalent of about 25 championship points, which would have been detrimental, but you could easily rebound from that. But here with 10 series championship owner points, they're gonna need a good finish at New Hampshire this weekend to kind of recover those points.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, I think the penalty is interesting. It's the first time under this new penalty system that somebody did a reoccurrence, which is kind of interesting that it took this long. But, you know, I guess the new penalty system really showed that it's been working lately.
Oh, yeah.
All right, our next topic of discussion for this evening is we're kind of moving pretty quickly here, kind of too fast. But Josh Berry was tagged to drive the number 5 JR Motorsports Chevrolet at Homestead for the Nationwide Series finale. Josh Berry, for you guys don't know, is a late model driver who captured the championship at Hickory, and he won 9 races at that track and won the championship by a 34-point margin despite missing one race over there to make his NASCAR Nationwide Series event at Iowa Speedway last month. So very talented race car driver. This is a driver that met Junior online through iRacing, and looks like he's going to get a chance to get another shot. And so, Glenn, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you, that is amazing that he met Dale Earnhardt Jr. through the iRacing.com thing. You never know who you're going to meet on there. But it's good for Josh Berry to, you know, get in the car at Homestead. And really, you know, in the final couple of races before we get to Homestead, I say watch for some teams to maybe test out some new drivers and maybe see some names that are kind of in the back of the pack but are now in, like, better equipment and stuff like that, because, you know, these are what I call the R&D 500, because this is where you can take a younger driver and put him in one of your cars for one race and see how they do, and who knows, maybe Josh Berry does good in his Nationwide Series debut. Or excuse me, at Homestead, I have a feeling that he could get a ride next year in one of JR Motorsports' cars.
heck, they could even produce a fourth car, which would turn into a third full-time car, maybe.
Yeah, you know, it might be interesting what they do over there, but, you know, I think this is an interesting move, and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what Josh Berry can do in his second start. You know, Iowa Speed was kind of a learning curve. You know, you get out there learning, not really expecting much out of you. And then, you know, you have all that tense and pressure because it's your first time. You know, this second opportunity is going to be better for him because he's going to be able to get out there and figure out how to adapt to the cars even better from his first time. So I think it's definitely going to help him, and it's definitely going to be interesting to see how he's going to be behind the wheel of it. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does, and, you know, it should be interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Next, we are going to talk about Justin Boston to run two Nationwide Series races for Joe Gibbs Racing. So, Glenn, what are your thoughts on Justin Boston to run the number 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing twice this year before the season is up?
Well, I like the fact that some of these ARCA Remax or ARCA drivers that we've talked about in the past and are also, you know, doing pretty well are getting a shot here. And Justin Boston is one of those drivers that I definitely want to see move up. And he'll be doing it at Kentucky Speedway in the 20 Loop Toyota Camry. And really, Justin Boston is a good driver, and you know he's going to be in some good equipment. I would not be surprised that in his first race he places top five or podium, or heck, he may even lead a couple of laps. Because pretty much anybody who's been in that number 20 car or that number 18 car from Joe Gibbs in Nationwide Series is not always, but sometimes guaranteed to at least lead a couple laps or possibly be in victory lane.
Good point there. And, you know, I think it's definitely going to be interesting to see how well Justin's going to do in the ride. And should be pretty fun to watch and see what he's capable of doing. And, you know, I won't be surprised if he'll be right up there with everyone else. So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch him. All right. Now, our next topic is we're going to go over the Nationwide Series race from Saturday night at the Chicagoland Speedway. It's a very interesting race as Kevin Harvick captured a victory by leading a total of 43 laps. The dominant car of Kyle Busch, who led 141 laps of the evening, finished third after having a after being shuffled back towards the end and almost drove his way back to the front but just couldn't quite get there. Kyle Larson comes home in second for another time, which I'm not sure how many second place finishes he had so far, but certainly a bunch. And you know, it was an okay race throughout the night. There was some incidents, like on lap 27 for a competition caution after rain fell on the speedway and you wanted to take a look at tire wear and other things. On lap 65, there was a caution for the number 70 car over in turn number 2. And then on lap 94, saw the last spin, and that was involving the number 17, a Tanner Berryhill, over in turn number 2. The next caution happened on lap 136, involving debris over in turn number 4. And then on lap 153, we saw the next to the last caution for fluid on the racetrack that was put down by the number 51 of Jeremy Clement. And then on lap 166, we saw our final caution of the night for the number 20 incident, which put fluid on the racetrack as well. So, Glenn, if you were able to watch Nationwide Series race, what did you think of it?
I did, and yeah, it was pretty good, and I'll tell you one thing, Kevin Harvick certainly came on pretty late in the race, but once he got in the race lead, there was no catching him. I mean that thing was freaky fast.
And we have Joseph on the line now. What's up?
Shalom, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. You?
I got to get my Israeli accent going. I'm going to Israel next summer. I got to get the accent going.
Sweet.
I'm going to bring NASCAR to Israel. How's that sound?
All right, Joseph. And your best Israel accent. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on the Nationwide race this past weekend at Chicagoland Speedway.
I wasn't around for a Nationwide race. I was at Riverhead getting soaked on by the stupid rain. I was there for the modified tour race, and the weather didn't like us at all that day, and it was pouring rain, and we didn't get to race at all. They did have a little practice, but that was about it. And so, yeah, I was there the whole day. I didn't even get home for the truck race in time. So I didn't see any racing on Saturday, unfortunately, but I did hear it was a pretty good race.
All right, and you know, it was an interesting race, I thought myself. You know, it certainly could have been better. It was much better than last week, that's for sure, but, you know, it could have been a little bit better. But
as long as the headline of the weekend isn't that a drunk guy is climbing the fence or that a squirrel is running across the track, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah. All right. Our next topic is reviewing the Lucas Oil 225 at the Chicagoland Speedway as Kyle Busch captured a victory by leading 66 total laps of the night. Matt Crafton came home in second after leading 14 laps in another track that was seemed dominant, but and probably was the only truck that had something for Kyle Busch toward the end, but kind of faded, was Austin Dillon, who finished in third after he led 28 total laps. And I can't remember, Joseph, I don't know if you watched the race or not, but what did you think of it?
Of the truck race or the cup race?
Yeah, truck race.
Which? The trucks?
Yes.
Oh, well, I wasn't around for that either, unfortunately. But Austin Dillon did get a little bit of a penalty, and Chris Rice, the crew chief of that truck, is suspended for this weekend's race at Loudon, which is going to hurt NTS Motorsports big time. He has been an essential part of that organization since coming over from RAV Racing. I have several connections at NTS Motorsports, and they could not be happier to have Chris Rice with them. And this is a minor setback, yes, but with the trucks that he's been able to build over there, as one of the most important guys on the team, he has really turned things around for them. And you can see that in their results. They're starting to perform a lot better. You can see Brendan Newberry running better. And having Austin Dillon at the helm doesn't hurt at all. And I don't know if you spoke about it yet, but Ron Hornaday is going to be going back to that team for two races at the end of the year. So that's definitely going to help them having the veteran with their organization for sure.
Yep. And if you guys were listening earlier, we did touch on that and some interesting stuff going over there for them. But, you know, it's going to be interesting seeing how they handle that for sure this week. So our next topic is that we're going to review the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race from Chicagoland Speedway for the MyAFibStory.com 400. Once again, this race was quite interesting and had some pretty good racing going. And, you know, I certainly enjoyed it. And I'm sure a lot of people did, too. As Brad Keselowski, once again, captured the victory after leading 62 total laps of the night. Jeff Gordon finished second. And guess who finished third? And this driver was really fast on Saturday as well, and that was Kyle Larson, who is trying to stink up the chase drivers and trying to sneak away with the win, even though he's not into the chase this year, but came close to making it. Another car that led most of the laps of the day was Kevin Harvick, but once again comes short of grabbing the victory in that number four Chevrolet. And so, Joseph, I'm going to go to you this time, because I think you watched this one. What do you think of the cup race?
Yeah, I was actually around for that one. I wasn't getting soaked to Riverhead. But it was a pretty good race. I thought it was a fantastic finish. Kyle Larson and Jamie McMurray were trying.
And we lost Joseph. So Glenn, what do you think of the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race?
Well, I think that I said a little bit earlier in the show that the real action started up with about 40 laps to go. I mean, for a while, it looked like that Larson was going to possibly win the first race, but the veterans just really kicked in, and Kevin Harvick put up a really great charge. But how about that three wide move? I mean, that was very Earnhardt-esque, and also Brad pulled it off beautifully. I mean, very few drivers can go three wide and thread the needle, you know, pretty well, because unfortunately, sometimes it results in, you know, a little bit of damage, or sometimes it involves in the big one. But yeah, and also realize this, people. Brad Keselowski has 5 wins this season. 5. I have a feeling that if he continues to be just like what he was at the Chicagoland race, I think Brad is going to get championship number 2 this year.
Oh, I agree totally. You know, you just look at that team. And I said this last week on the show, and Joseph thought I was crazy. But I think Joey Logano or Brad Keselowski is going to win this championship this year. I don't know which of the two it's going to be, but it's going to be one of them, I think, because that team has just been flat sailing all year long in those cars. And, you know, definitely if they don't win, it's definitely going to be a Hendrick car, no doubt. I mean, those two teams have just been really strong this year, but you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens in the next 9 chase races this year and who's going to come out on top in Homestead.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now we're going to go back into the news topic as we still wait for Joseph to return on here. But Corey LaJoie is to make his NASCAR Sprint Cup Series debut at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. And, Glenn, could you chime in on this, on what your thoughts on that is?
You know, seeing Corey LaJoie move up, I think that's really good. And, you know, we've not really seen too much out of this kid, but, you know, I'm glad that he's carrying on the LaJoie name. And, you know, we'll see what he does. And he's debuting this weekend, right?
Yes. No. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I'm
but,
not sure.
But, yeah. Well, if he is debuting this weekend, this week, New Hampshire would be a perfect place to make your team to debut, really.
All right. And, you know, I think it's definitely interesting that he's going to be making his debut. Is he ready for it? Probably not. You know, I kind of disagree with doing that move. But, you know, I mean, if that's what they think that will help him, then And I guess that was the why they decided, you know, I felt like he could have gotten some more nationwide series starts before. And a lot of people don't forget that he is actually under developmental deal with Richard Petty Motorsports. So, interesting thing right there. And Joseph is still not on with us, so we're going to go into our next news topic. And that is the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards held a test session today at the Kentucky Speedway. And most listeners on here are probably thinking, well, why are we talking about ARCA testing? Well, because this was a pretty big test for them, as Ben Rhodes, which is a up-and-coming NASCAR star, he clinched the 2014 NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series, still have like another race or two remaining on their schedule. And also Daniel Suarez was a part of it. And then one driver, which I had to check with the team on Monday, and that is Austin Terrell, who tested a Venturini Motorsports car that took him to victory lane in his first ARCA Racing Series debut at Michigan earlier this year. And he tested the number 66A car for Venturini, but he is just testing this weekend, as I texted Tommy with the racing team, and he said that he's just testing and that Terrell won't be racing in the race. But interesting stuff right here. I'm just going to name out the top 10 here. Will Kimmel is fastest with a 31.044 seconds, 173.947 miles per hour in that Ford. Justin Boston rounded out second. Third was Ben Rhodes. Fourth, Mason Mitchell. Fifth was Daniel Suarez. Sixth, Kyle Weatherman. Seventh was Cody Coughlin. Eighth, Josh Williams. Ninth, Justin Allison. And tenth was Will Kimmel. As he tested two cars, he did the number 52 for Kenny Schrader and also the number 69 for his regular team. So some interesting names on the top of the board there that we see in NASCAR, and they're going to be future stars. Glenn, would you like to, I think you're wanting to chime in on it.
What did you say? I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'll go for it.
The ARCA Racing Series test session from Kentucky.
Yeah, Will Kimmel was fastest today. He's still looking for his first career win. He's running a few races for TriStar Motorsports in the Nationwide Series, and he hasn't performed too well there. But he has been doing rather well in the ARCA series as of late. He almost won at Pocono. He's extremely fast there. And that little team is starting to come alive. He also tested the number 52 car for Ken Schrader. So that was interesting. But the guys that I'm looking out for are Mason Mitchell and Justin Boston for this race. They have been extremely quick all year. Obviously, Mason Mitchell is probably the best driver out there right now on the ARCA Series circuit, albeit Grant Enfinger has 6 wins this year. Mason Mitchell is by far more consistent, and he's been very close to getting a win again. And I think that once he does get back to victory lane, you're going to see him win nonstop at this rate. He's flat out fast every week with the cell phone team. We've spoken to him a couple of times. He just really has so much talent, and I personally know how much it would mean for him to win this championship. It would be great for him to get that done, and hopefully he's going to move up the ranks. And then you have a guy like Ben Rhodes and Daniel Suarez and as you said, Cody Coughlin. They all tested today, and for Ben Rhodes, I spoke to him yesterday. I interviewed him, and we spoke for about 20 minutes, and he told me something very important that I want to tell you guys. He is planning on running the Nationwide Series or the Camping World Truck Series next year once he turns 18. Ironically enough, coincidentally enough, he turns 18 on the first week of the Nationwide Series circuit, at Xfinity, at Daytona, it's going to be that day that he turns 18. So I highly doubt that NASCAR would let him qualify the car, or at least practice it. I believe qualifying is the same day for that event. So he probably will be able to race if they choose to do so. But for the truck series, he won't be able to race because that's on Friday night, and he turns 18 on Saturday. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens for him. He is looking for sponsorship because Alpha Energy Solutions doesn't have the budget to come with him, but they might sponsor a race or two, he said. And for Daniel Suarez, what else can you say about this kid? He's flat out amazing, and he's going to be a real great driver, I believe, next year in the Nationwide Series. And Brendan Poole was 11th fastest. Originally, this was supposed to be John Westpowney's race, but Brendan Poole has been doing such a good job that Vendrini Motorsports and Zaxby's are enabling him to run this weekend. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend.
Interesting stuff. And normally we don't talk about the ARCA Racing Series, but they're going into their second to the last race of the year, and Mason Mitchell currently leads the point series standings. And Grant Enfinger, who started the year out hot, is second. Third is Tom Hesert, and then the fourth spot is taken up by last year's champion, Frank Kimmel, and then Justin Boston rounds out the top five. So it's definitely going to be an interesting championship, and you know, it's definitely going to be interesting to see who's going to come out with it, but it's probably going to be Mason Mitchell, and if he does win it, you know, it's definitely going to mean a lot to that team and to him, because that team, I believe, started out at the beginning of this year, and Mason Mitchell actually started it himself. So, you know, just by all of that, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it was a questionable move at first when he started his own team. But he has clearly shown that it was the smartest decision he has ever made. He was racing for the Ruolo brothers last year and moved over to Empire Racing. And that's where he really broke out to become such a talented driver and showed his talent. And this year he opted to go make his own team. And it's proving to be the best decision of his life, probably. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see him starting to move up the ranks as soon as next year.
I believe Ben Kennedy did something similar whenever he moved up to the NASCAR Champion World Truck Series with his Canon Pro Series, right, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, pretty interesting stuff right there, and it's definitely going to be a heck of a battle to the end for that. All right, our next topic was probably the biggest news out of today, and that was Stanley and DeWalt will join Joe Gibbs Racing. They will sponsor Matt Kenseth for 6 races with DeWalt, and Stanley will sponsor his teammate Carl Edwards for 12 races, and then they will be an associate sponsor all year round on the number 18 Toyota, and they will also serve as an associate sponsor when they're not on the cars of Matt Kenseth or Carl Edwards. So pretty interesting stuff right there, and I'm going to start with Glenn on this. Your thoughts on this deal with Joe Gibbs Racing?
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny that there's going to be a sponsorship driver reunion, because we always knew of Matt Kenseth as a DeWalt Power Tools Ford back at Roush Fenway Racing, and now DeWalt comes over, you know, back as sponsorship for Kenseth. But it's cool that Gibbs has found some sponsorship for Matt Kenseth, but also seeing Stanley Tools go over to Carl Edwards, that was a surprise. But because that was sponsoring Marcus Ambrose over there at Richard Petty Motorsports. And, you know, even though Richard Petty said that there was still going to be a two-car team, it's going to be interesting to see what sponsorship will now take over that number 9 car and also who's going to be in it. But it's definitely a big at the fact that not only you know, not only do we have a sponsorship reunion, but we also have a teammate reunion because Edwards and Kenseth used to be teammates.
Joseph.
Yeah, it's putting Richard Petty Motorsports in a little tight boat right now, actually, because now they're losing Black & Decker, who owns Stanley Tools and DeWalt. They're actually cutting back their sponsorship a little bit. Excuse me. I believe it's 18 races they're going to sponsor, 12 for Carl Edwards, 6 for Matt Kenseth, and it is good because it's a reunion for Matt Kenseth and DeWalt. Obviously, DeWalt sponsored Matt Kenseth as early as his Nationwide Series career back in 1999 with Robbie Reiser as his owner. And then after that, they went to Roush Fenway Racing. They won a championship at Daytona 500. I mean, it doesn't get better for that. But now, after not having too much success with Richard Petty Motorsports, they're getting a little more bang for the buck, so to speak. They're basically going to be paying around the same amount of money to sponsor the number 20 and number 19 cars next year. But they're going to be with more competitive teams, which at the end of the day gets you more notoriety, so to speak. So I think it's going to be a good deal, and it's definitely good to see. But for Richard Petty Motorsports, there are a lot of questions surrounding that team right now. No one knows who their driver is going to be. Whoever that driver is going to be needs to bring sponsorship along. Now let's talk about who could be the driver that's going to go over to them. There are a few possibilities I spoke about in an article earlier this week, and those drivers are Sam Morris Jr. mainly and David Reagan. Cornish is probably the top candidate right now from what I'm being told. However, if he can't find sponsorship, which he did have a problem with last season, which is why he's not racing for Team Penske anymore, he will not get the ride. It's that simple. David Reagan, on the other hand, has brought sponsorship into this sport with Front Row Motorsports. He's brought in Farm Fresh, he's brought in Dockside Solutions, CXX Transportation, and a couple of other companies. So I wouldn't be surprised if he takes one of those companies. They spend a little more money to sponsor about half the season with Richard Petty Motorsports. He would easily be a top 20 driver on a weekly basis. And then there's a guy like Parker Kligerman, who does own his own company, mind you. So he could partially invest in the team and have a seat for at least a good portion of the season. And maybe they could split that ride with some of their younger drivers, like Corey LaJoie, who's making his Spring Cup Series debut this weekend for Randy Humphrey Racing. What do you guys think?
Well, Sam Horsch would be a good pick to take over the number 9 car, but I want to throw another name out there that could possibly move up. And they currently have him in the Nationwide Series. What about somebody like Dakota Armstrong? Do you think he's ready to move up into a ride like that?
Absolutely not. That's just not going to happen. He only has 2 top 10s this year. He has performed awful, and the only reason he is on the team is because he has Winfield as a sponsor. If he didn't have Winfield, I guarantee you they would not have signed him. It's just like the Michael Annette deal they did. At first, they just signed him just because he had the money, but then he started performing well, and that's what they're hoping with Dakota Armstrong. But the kid didn't even perform well for Richard Childress Racing, so I highly doubt anything is going to happen with him, especially considering how bad his performance has been this year. The top candidates right now are Sam Horsch Jr., David Reagan. I'm throwing Parker Kligerman in there, maybe Elliott Sadler, if One Main Financial would like to go with him, because Jokibs Racing clearly seems like they're on the move to make it more of a younger generation type of a Nationwide team. So I think Sadler is going to be out of the number 11 car with Darrell Wallace Jr. replacing him. And then you're going to have Eric Jones in the Nationwide Series probably at least on a part-time basis next year, with him going full-time in the Truck Series. And then there are a couple of other guys out there that you should throw out there, like I'm trying to think, Michael McDowell, Josh Wise, who both have partnerships with Ford. They could go that ride if they get sponsorship. Let's see, who else is there? There aren't too many drivers out there. You could throw in Regan Smith out there, even though he probably won't do it, because he's just so comfortable racing in the Nationwide Series for JR Motorsports. And there's a guy like Brian Scott, who has the potential, actually, to go full-time Cup racing next year for RCR in a fourth car if they choose to do so. But if they don't, he's going to be in a little pickle, because Ty Dillon is going to be going the Cup Series no matter what. He's going to be going Cup Series around 2016. He's running a couple of races next year, just like Weston Dillon did, basically, the same exact plan. And so I'm expecting that Brian Scott is going to be on the move within either this offseason or next offseason for sure.
Some good stuff, guys. And our final topic is about Michael Waltrip moving on to the next round and Dancing with the Stars. I'm going to start this off with Joseph.
Yeah, I am actually seeing him dance, but it was definitely interesting to see that he moved on.
Glenn?
There was no doubt in my mind that Michael was going to move on, because if you guys watch the show, it comes on every Monday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time. It goes for about 2 hours. he was not the best dancer in the group, but he was better than many of the other people that, you know, scored lower. And now that Michael's off to the next round, we'll see what dance he gets. Now, normally the second week, it produces either the quick step or the jive. And since he's a pretty tall guy, I expect him to possibly get the quick step. The jive, I don't know if he's going to do that at any point this season, but, you know, the NASCAR fans have spoken and they've moved him on in the next round.
All right. Now we're going to move on to over to Glenn's open wheel report.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. So we saw history. Well, for the ones that were awake at the time, we saw history as the new Formula E Series took to its very first race in Beijing, China. And this is an amazing race, because check this out. Nicholas Prost won the pole for that race, and the fan boost winner went to Lucas DeGrassi in the Audi Sport ABT car. And after 25 laps of racing and after a very interesting pit road procedure and all that, it was Lucas DeGrassi who took home the very first Formula E win for Audi Sport, and also his first win of the season. So let's take a look at the finishing order and see what your favorite driver finished in the Beijing E3. Lucas DeGrassi won the race. Frank Montagne, how about a good finish for him in second place? And Sam Bird of the Virgin Racing Team rounded out the podium spot. Charles Sixth finished fourth. Tarun Chathok, a former Hindra, finished fifth. Jerome D'Ambrosio finished sixth. Oreo Servia finished seventh. Nelson Piquet finished eighth. Ninth was Stefan Sarzin. And running up the top 10 spots was Daniel Abbott. Alain Van Dijk, Jaime Alguersuari, Nicholas Prost, who got into a wreck with Nick Heidfeld at the very end of the race, finished 12th and 13th. Prost had finished 10th, but was given a 10-place grid spot penalty for the next race for causing an avoidable collision or a wreck with Nick Heidfeld. Luckily, Heidfeld is okay. Mikhail Cirelli finished 14th. Catherine Lang finished 15th. Ho-Pin Tung finished 16th. Takuma Sato was a fastest lap award winner. He finished 17th. Sebastian Buemi finished 8th. 19th was Jarno Trulli. And Bruno Senna, unfortunately, had a wreck at the beginning of the race, so he finished back in 20th. Just some minor notes here. Alguersuari, Catherine Lang, and Daniel Abbott were handed 57-second penalties for exceeding the 28-kilowatt battery consumption rule. So they they got the times added to their finishing order. But the next race for Formula E Series is not until Saturday, November 22nd, as they head to Malaysia. It is the Putra Jaya Malaysia E3, and we'll definitely have a preview of that later on, or actually next month. Oh, wait a second, hold on. November 22nd? Ooh, a long time to wait. All right, so, meanwhile, the F1 Series is back in action this weekend. It's one of the biggest night races of them all. It's the Formula One Singapore Airlines Singapore Grand Prix at the Marina Bay Street Circuit. This 23-turn street course is very, very, very tight. There's barely room to pass here, and it involves a lot of tight turns, some very short straightaways, but you can pass here on this particular track. The setup for your car is good acceleration. Top speed means nothing here. If you have a good car that can launch off of the corners, you're going to be just fine. There are a couple of trouble spots that you're going to have to look out for. One of them is turns 1, 2, 3, and 4. A lot of accidents have taken place here, as well as there's also a huge runoff area off of turn number 1. And there's also two DRS activation points as well as detection points. The first one, excuse me, I got the hiccups over here all of a sudden. Anyway, after turn number 4, there's the detection point, and then coming out of turn number 5, there's one of the DRS activation zones, which leads right into turn number 7, the memorial corner. And then the next one is going to be all the way before turn 22. And then the next activation zone is going to be on the front stretch. 61 laps will make up the running here. The lap record was set last year by Sebastian Vettel. A 148.574 was his last time. And even though the overall course is a little bit short, I can also confirm this. Tomorrow, IndyCar and Brazil are going to come out with an announcement, apparently. It sounds like that we are going to be racing in Brazil next year at the Autódromo de Nelson Piquet or possibly one of the other circuits. We can't race in the streets of Sao Paulo, Brazil, because right now they are preparing for the Summer Olympics when they go to Rio de Janeiro in 2016. And also the conversation of cockpit canopies has been opened again. I won't go too far. I will save that for next week as more things come about. But people have been very passionate about this topic. So anyway, that's it for the Open Wheel Report for this weekend. You know, good luck to everybody in Singapore. And I believe that we come to the very end of the show. So I guess I ended again. So you can follow the entire gang on Twitter. I am at IndyCarGL2488. And don't forget to catch me on Facebook, which is also at IndyCarGL, Facebook.com/IndyCarGL2488. And I hope you guys have a great weekend. We're off to New Hampshire, the Magic Mile. And really quickly, this track is best suited for drivers like Denny Hamlin, and also Jimmy Johnson, who this track might be an Achilles heel for, are Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Brad Keselowski. So we'll see what happens in all three races. So from all of us to all of you, you've been listening to Speedway Digest here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week to talk about New Hampshire, to talk about the Magic Mile, and then to preview the Monster Mile, where we eliminate 4 drivers and reduce the field to 12.